Hello, it is Bootstrapped Web. We're back. Jordan, how's it going, man?
Good, man. Great to be back. Great to be back on the podcast, back in Portland. Very nice, man.
Very cool. So yeah, we did, I mean, not that we ever do any extensive prep, but we literally just got on the call today. So what's going on?
Okay, let's see. So the past 2 weeks, I went back to New York. My sister-in-law had a baby. So we brought the whole, thank you very much. Appreciate it. It's her first one. So it was a big deal. So we took the whole family back to New York, spent some time in Connecticut, saw some family, realized all over again why we left New York. and now we're back in Portland very happily.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, we're summertime over here and it's nice. I'm trying to have a relaxed work schedule and while getting some work done. And then this week, everything just feels like it's coming crashing down and crashing up at the same time and things crashing into each other. And whatever I had planned to do this week, I am definitely not going to be doing this week because I am consumed in personnel issues at Audience Apps.
Okay. This sounds like a lot of crashing. Yeah, so I've had some interesting experience over the past 2 weeks, a while away also. So let's get into those because a lot of my issues are personnel related also, at least tangentially. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you want to start things off?
Well, the good news is that Audience Ops is definitely having a couple of really good months now. We had a tough early in the year, you know, January, February, March, where we were seeing a bit of a stagnation and a dip in everything, both you know, revenue and signups and leads, everything was starting to kind of go slow around that period. Since then, you know, April, May, June have been really good, especially June. And like this past week, the last two, three weeks, we've had a number of client signups. Things are just really looking up. Some of the marketing stuff that I've been doing has helped. The Facebook ads are continuing to run. I've been so busy that I haven't really been managing those. They're kind of just on autopilot right now. I want to get back into, you know, doing some more optimization and maybe like doubling down on those a bit. The other thing that I wanted to do, again, that I had to not do this week was to fire up some new cold email campaigns. And I basically started that process and ran into a bit of a hitch and then everything started going crazy around here. You know, some ops calendar updates are kind of on the back burner and things that I want to get going again on that front. But
it sounds like that's directly linked to the optimism in Audience Ops itself.
Yes, it is. So on that front, I had the developers kind of take a couple of months off. They stayed around to fix some bugs as they come up and they would just do minor feature updates. But I really ramped down their hours for a few months there to make sure that, you know, I got Audience Ops growing again and really make sure I can build up the profit to self-fund Ops Calendar. So now we're definitely at the point where I can bring them back on and really get going on it. There's two problems. One is those guys took on other projects, so I kind of have to wait for them to wrap up some other projects of theirs over the next month or two. You know, I'm not going to hire new developers. I definitely want to keep working with the same guys. And so they're probably going to wrap those up and get really back into the swing of things around August, September. I have some big features that I've been thinking about and starting to design, especially around using Ops Calendar for our work at Audience Ops. And that coincides with really aiming the product at agencies like us.
Okay, and starting to zero in on the higher value customer.
Yeah, but I mean, all of that is just conceptual right now. And I'm doing zero marketing other than like talking about it here. We are using Ops Calendar in Audience Ops for the features that it does have today. We're using those. But other than that, I'm not actively going out and getting new customers. You know, all of that is really going to be just on hold for probably until at least the fall, you know, when things really get into the swing of things. We're signing up new clients. We had, I think, three new client signups this week. I think three new came in last week. And two people quit yesterday.
team members.
Yeah. And both of them are pretty heavy writers on our team. So they both write for a bunch of clients. And one of them is also a project manager. they gave me like a 2-week notice, and I negotiated that to hopefully they could stick around for maybe closer to 3 weeks and help us really phase this out. So there's that combined with the fact that we just hired 2 new project managers like 3 weeks ago, and they're doing a good job and they're getting the hang of things, but they're still kind of in, okay, still kind of figuring out this role, training mode. The project manager role is really something that it takes many weeks to really understand the role. So they're still new. And then by next week, I want to hire at least 2 new writers and 2 new project managers. We did bring on 2 writers this past week. One came on yesterday, one came on a week ago, and I'm going to hire 2 additional writers and then 2 project managers. And so basically the big thing that I'm thinking about right now is that for a long time at AudienceOps, like the first 2 years, I had this strategy of, okay, let's try to do what we can to keep the headcount to a minimum. Obviously it's a service, so we're going to keep growing headcount, but I want to try to keep that to a minimum and give whatever teammates we do have as much work as they're willing to take on for AudienceOps. And most of the freelancers that we work with are willing to take on a lot of work. They love the steady long-term retainer, you know, the reliability of AudienceOps. Like, yeah, the workload kind of ticks up and ticks down, but for the most part, like, they're getting direct deposit twice a month. They're, you know, it accounts for at least half of their time, some of them almost full-time, to balance out like the ups and downs of other freelance work that comes and goes. My thinking has always been like, let's try to keep a small team and really pack in their schedules as much as they're willing to do. But what has happened is, and I mean, that kind of worked pretty well for us in the first year or two. But for some reason now it doesn't work as well. And I'm not exactly sure why but basically what we're seeing is writers are handing in articles late past the deadlines. And then that causes crunches for our editors and for our assistants and managers who then need to keep the publishing schedule on track. And when things get crunched like that and turn into a rush job, then errors happen and then clients get upset and then that causes more problems. And, you know, most of these things individually they're not good, but they're not the end of the world and we can always deal with them as they come up, but they've just come up more and more often, you know, more frequently. And that just tells me that, and we've reworked our systems again and again, you know, and these things have come up for over a year now. And so I feel like at this point, it's not, we can only work the system so much. And it's really about everybody on the team being able to manage their own schedules, you know, as efficiently as possible. But B, I just come to the conclusion that I think everybody is overworked, especially a few key people on the team just have too many clients under their belt. And so now I'm shifting my thinking to, okay, forget the idea of limiting the headcount. Let's actually get more than enough people on board in AudienceOps and spread the work around and keep limits in terms of the max number of articles a writer can take, the max number of clients a manager can manage. And
do you think that's a reason or the reason that the two left?
Well, no. I mean, one guy just took a full-time job and he was like, yeah, he was just like really happy with how things have been going at AudienceOps for a while. And then he was like, I wish it didn't happen at such a bad time, but like, I can't turn this position down. And then the other one, she had a lot of other client work going on in addition to a pretty heavy load at AudienceOps. And she's been on the team for like over two years. And so she kind of outgrew her role here in a way. And that's totally understandable. And I applaud that, you know, so.
Right. It's unlikely that people stay forever.
Exactly. Yeah,
but several years. These days, that is forever.
Yeah. And we have like at least 4 or 5 other people on the team who've been on the team for almost 2 years now.
Yeah, that's a good sign. So it begs the question, though, Brian. How are you going to make the math work of what you're saying is the utilization rate per employee should be lower? You put people at 90%, they're going to get exhausted, or over 100%, however you want to put it. It looks like you're doing less work and less clients per person on the team. How does that affect the math on the other side of revenue? Because what you're effectively saying is labor expenses are going to go up.
Not necessarily. So now everybody on the team is basically paid per article and per whatever thing that they do on the team, whether they're managing clients or editing or writing articles.
So that's why you don't see the increase in headcount necessarily resulting in more expenses, because if the unit metrics stay consistent, then it actually is no different.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Really, it's been this way since the beginning, is that everybody on the team are freelancers, or they're just looking to work on a part-time basis. Some of them are like stay-at-home moms, and they only want to work 10, 15 hours a week, and so this is kind of a good fit for them. Others have other client work going on, and then they supplement that with audience ops work. The other challenge that we've had is just the process of hiring people and onboarding them, and training them, and then getting them ready to start taking on client work, whether it's writing or managing clients. And that's like a good two to three week process, at least, you know, before they can really be up and running with us. And when we get an influx of client signups, we're kind of scrambling to figure out like who are we going to assign these clients to?
Right. Especially those first few weeks, you want to impress people.
Yeah. I mean, when a client signs up, like, we do hit the ground running. We start working on their stuff within a week. So I need to get back to a point where we're getting ahead of it. And like, after I do this week, you know, hiring a bunch of new people to give us more capacity, after that, I want to have a system where every single month we're hiring a new writer. On the manager side, I'm thinking about opening up like an assistant manager, like an apprenticeship position, where somebody who just wants to get into that sort of work, working from home, working remotely, working online with a company like this, they can join the team at kind of like an entry level and just do some low level tasks and learn our systems and kind of assist in certain things. And then when the time comes, we need another manager, they're ready to go. They already kind of know our systems. And they can, you know, step up to that.
I like that idea. We've experienced the same thing. At the point in time in which you are able to hire and also need to hire, like, you're way behind. You're way behind. You need people that know you. You know them. You trust each other. Like each other. You've seen it. They know a bit about the business. It's kind of like it's hard to do. It's why you see people and like larger companies always out in the space. They are running events, they are sponsoring things, because you need that. So it's some interesting ways for you to kind of have project managers, which are those key roles, kind of bubbling in the background.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, that's the hardest role to, it's the hardest role to hire for, to even just decide like who's going to be a good project manager here. It's like hiring writers is a little bit easier, because you can review their work, their writing samples, you know, you could talk to them about their approach to writing, and then you can get a pretty good feel like, all right, that they're a rock star, they're going to be great here. But the managers, it's just such a weird position to hire for. The other challenge that I have with that position is that I call it a project manager, but it's like not a project manager that most people think of. Most people think of a project manager in like an agency setting of like, that person is in charge of building and customizing like custom solutions and getting people and being the point person, and every client is different, and we're going to manage 1,000 different things in Asana, and we're going to be putting out client fires left and right. And it's not like that at all at Audience Ops. It's a much more streamlined and process oriented role. Everything we do is, we don't do anything custom. We have a standard process and a standard plan that every client gets. And so it's really just the manager's role to make sure that, to be the point of contact between the client and our team, and relay feedback from the client to the writers, and make sure writers and everyone else on the team are delivering on time, and manage like new client onboarding and stuff. Like, that's what the managers do. And most of our managers they only really have to work around 5 to 10 max hours per week, believe it or not. Even when they're managing like multiple clients, 5 to 10 clients, it's not a very hours heavy job. It's like literally hopping in to Slack and Trello and Help Scout for like 1 to 2 hours a day, checking in on the things you need to check in on, sending a couple of emails in batch. We have templates for everything. And then you know, working with the writers to just check in on their progress, and like you're in and out, you know, occasional call with a client, and that's it. And so it's been hard to set expectations for what that's like with new applicants. And it could just be the way that I'm naming the role. When I put up job ads for project manager, I'm getting applications from folks who've been working at these like huge companies as a high level project manager, and this type of role is not for them, you know.
Right. That's how they identify, and then the job isn't as they expected. Yeah. Like, you have to talk about that instead of qualifications and experience.
Yeah, and so the people who are best for that position, like most of them are also freelance writers who just happen to be really good at communicating, and they're super organized, and they've managed a content marketing process before. That's kind of who tends to work out here. It's especially, and even if they're not like super experienced as writers, especially those who are just looking for a steady, very part-time work at home situation, they tend to be a good fit for that as well. So that's what I'm dealing with right now. Like literally today on a Friday, which I don't normally do other work calls, you know, I have like 3 interviews with potential managers today. And, but you know, got to do it. I mean, the good news is that the client list is growing. So
yeah,
and revenue, you know, revenue is right back up where it was. So it's good.
And I'd love to hear over the next couple of weeks. It sounds like you don't have a crystal clear idea of where those new customers came from, but I'm assuming you'll get a better sense of it over the next few weeks of what did it. Was it your personal email list? Was it the Facebook ads? Was it a combination? Was it referrals?
I don't know for sure, but I think that it was a combination, because a lot of people come from hearing me on a podcast, whether it's our podcast or, you know, I'm a guest on a bunch of podcasts and they hear me there. That's a common one, because I ask on the lead forms, like, where'd you hear about us? And a lot of them say a podcast. Some of them say they've been on my email list. Some of them say they were referred by someone. But those channels have always been there since the very start of Audience Ops. And there was a period where that stuff dried out, and now it's coming back again. And I kind of have a feeling that, like, yeah, they heard me on a podcast, but since they then visited the site, then they started seeing ads.
Yes.
You know?
That's right. A little combination.
And also, I don't know how many people would even remember that they saw an ad or be willing to admit that they came from an ad. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. If it's not a straightforward like click attribution thing, then it's a mixture. You don't really know. Even if you get people to tell you, you're still not 100% sure.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, that plus I did publish a bunch of big articles in the last couple of weeks, and then like this week, you know, I launched my YouTube channel and the Productize podcast. So I am getting myself more out there than I was for a while. And so that stuff is ramping up now. So I'd expect that'll drive more activity as well. I mean, the Productize course continues to sell pretty well too. So
I like the theme this podcast is taking on of good problems to have. Let's keep that going for a while.
It is a good problem to have. I'm not going to lie, but the thing that I don't like is when, because I'm a freak about systems, right? Like it should be growing systematically, not growing like a scramble, you know.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I know. Like I just want to know that, like, and I have a team manager on our team who helps with some of the filtering applicants and doing some first tier interviews with people, but like I'm still very heavily involved in the hiring process, and I want to get it to a point where, like, I would love to grow to a point where we just have like a COO, you know, like or some sort of operations head who just takes over all that stuff. And
I have heard the word COO more in the past 30 days than I have in the prior year. It didn't come up for a long time. And then, I don't know, maybe it's the type of conversations that I'm having, but that word COO just comes up more often. You could see the...
Well, I mean, where Carthook is at, I mean, you've been talking about, like, now we need systems and now we need operations. And that's I'm sure that's why, right?
Yeah. You see businesses kind of starting to mature, and then it's not often the same person with the same skill set that got the company off the ground. It's not usually not the same person. At least I know in my case, it's not the same person. That would be best for building up systems.
So that's where it's at. So what about you?
My past 2 weeks have been very related to that COO word. So I'll tell you like the kind of the evolution of what happened and what I learned along with it. A few weeks ago, I started to get to the point where I just need to kind of admit, okay, I can't do everything. How am I going to change the reality of my day-to-day, my responsibilities, my tasks, and so on? So the first thing I got to was I am almost going to take like a hiatus. Like I need people to pretend I don't exist. Like, dear team, pretend I'm on vacation.
Yeah.
Like,
if you disappeared for a week, will things fall apart?
Right. And it makes sense that kind of idea came along at the same time as I was away in New York and I was away from the team and I was like, I felt very peaceful.
Sorry. Speaking of that, just to cap off what I was just talking about, like scrambling to have to hire people. So next week, Kat, our team manager, who is pretty instrumental in training new people and hiring, she's on vacation next week. And then the week after that, I'm on vacation. So couldn't have come at a better time. So,
yes. Yeah. Love it. <Yep. laughs> So it makes sense. I was away. I was on East Coast time. Coincidentally, Ben, who's normally in New York, was in Portland. So we were flipped. So I would be waking up and getting to the coffee shop at 8:30 a.m. It's 5:30 a.m. on the West Coast. I'm like, nobody knows I exist. I can just work for a few hours. No one even knows that they can contact me. And maybe that's where it came from. Like, okay, what could I get done or how would it change and improve things? Because what I started to identify was I kept looking at my to-do list and I kept looking at the things that were really important that I should do and no one else can do. And I was barely getting to them. And I started to feel like, okay, this has to change. We're starting to have enough people in the company. We're six of us now. We're looking to hire two more. So we'll be eight soon. We're starting to get to the point where we should be able to cover our own bases. And I shouldn't have 15 different areas of responsibility because it just guarantees that I won't do them well. So that initial thought of like, what if I told the team I was on vacation for 2 weeks and just pretend like you can't escalate anything to me? So of course, that's a little silly and short-sighted. Like you could do that for a week, but that's not a long-term solution.
I think it's good. I think it's a good idea though, because it'll definitely, I think you'll be surprised, A, how much your team can do without you, and B, where you really need to prioritize your, like which systems you need to build that aren't existing yet.
Right. So
I think you should do that.
Well, okay. So here's the thing. So I kind of did it by default by being in New York, and we had hired a new team member, Matt, who's on customer success, and we're starting him off in support actually, because we think what is the best way to learn everything really, really fast? It's in our support channel because our support channel is very active. Let's say that we just have a lot of signups. We just did a big affiliate deal that launched like just more signups in a week than we're used to in a month. So everything's kind of very energetic, and we think putting him in support first is the best kind of trial by fire to just learn everything, see everything. And then it's actually not a big shift to success because you're still talking to people. You're just answering pre-sales questions instead of support questions. And so we think that that's the right shift. So we hire someone and I'm not here. So the first week this person worked with us here in the office in Portland, it was just him and Aaron, our head of customer support, working together. And it was magical. Like they just get everything done. And I really am not that necessary in that case. So another nice coincidence is when I'm in New York, I get to see my brothers. My younger brother I've spoken with about before. He's very into systems. He's the one that runs the Crunch Gym franchises. So he has like 90 employees. Like you have to have systems. And he's very into eMyth and coaching and all, just building out systems and so on, much, much more so than I am. So I'm having a conversation with him. And he's like, here's what it brings to mind. He gave me an equation. And the equation is performance equals potential minus interference. Right? So the performance of a team member in what they're responsible for is basically a factor of their potential or their ability to do it, minus the interference, the things that prevent them from accomplishing those responsibilities. So what that equation helped me do is it helped me, A, understand myself and my situation, right? My ability to perform. Like, what are you actually being judged on? Like, your performance, it's not like how hard you work. It's what you're responsible for. Is that being affected positively? Right? So when we look at Matt, our new hire, and his performance will be judged by the percentage of new trials that turn into paying customers, right? That's his metric. If we're going to judge him based his performance based on that, it's potential, what he can do, his current experience, skill set. Yeah.
What are the things that like gets in the way of him turning more trials into customers?
Right. So every additional thing that we task him with or that get in his way is going to affect his performance. So I started to see, okay, that role, I started to see the same thing in my role and all these, you know, all the individual people. And what that helped me do was figure out a way to talk about this with the team that didn't sound like me saying, so guys, I don't want to do the shit work anymore and I'd like for you to do it instead, right? Because that sucks. And that's not even accurate. The truth is I need to perform better as a CEO. And my equation is insane. The interference portion of my equation is just preposterous. Right. And we have to reduce that.
I love that idea of that formula. I've never heard it that way.
Me neither. I was like, dude, this is perfect.
Yeah, it seems so, like overly simplistic. But then once you really start to think about it, what I'm thinking about right now is I've had that same sort of mentality in terms of defining my team's roles. Writers just write. They are not doing client communication. They're not doing technical setups. They are just researching and writing. You know, the assistants, they only do the technical setups. You know, the editors, they just edit. And I think that's working well. But where it breaks down is like same. Like for me, like I'm doing too much. I can't work on the things that are actually going to grow the bottom line of the business when I get consumed in all these other distractions. And I get so many, I still get too many questions being escalated to me from the team. Like, am I doing this correctly? This is kind of a special question that's not documented somewhere. How am I supposed to handle that? Sometimes I feel like at this point we might have gone too far in the direction of like too many systems and processes where especially for new people coming in, they see all those systems and like they're designed to make everybody's job easier. But since they see all these systems, they feel like, all right, there has to be a correct way to do everything. And I'm not sure if I'm doing everything correctly.
Right. So it becomes a dependency thing. So exactly that, exactly what you're talking about, what this equation helped me communicate was that when you escalate something to me, you are increasing the portion of my equation, the interference portion, right? And then that is going to take away from my performance as whatever your role is. So in that way, what you're really saying isn't, we are all going to judge me based on my performance that has to do with X, Y, and Z responsibilities.
So as CEO, what do you see as your performance side or the potential side?
First and foremost, making sure we have enough money in the bank to pay salaries to keep the party going, right? Then I have other responsibilities such as marketing right now is my responsibility. Until we hire a head of marketing, that's my responsibility. So that is involved in my performance equation, right? So the number of trials. And so how do I best affect that? Me personally, it's partnerships. It's not content and it's not advertising. It's networking and partnerships like the affiliate partnership that we just launched that, you know, it's a relationship thing that's the thing I'm best at. That's what I enjoy the best. So that's something that I should be spending my time on.
I think for me, it's kind of the same except for, so marketing definitely, like marketing and sales is all me right now. And I don't feel a special need to offload sales at this point. I think at some point in the, I don't know, next 6 to 12 months. Yeah, I would like to have a sales team, but I don't think that's a necessity right now. I think it's still good for me to do that. marketing in general, so getting myself out there and managing some of our content stuff on Audience Ops.
Right. But you are responsible for bringing on new clients.
Yes.
Right. So whatever you want to call that, that's part of your performance. You got to bring clients in.
Yeah. And having money to pay the team, given our model, it's really just about how many clients it's completely self-funded based on the revenue that we have. So my only key job there is to bring in revenue.
Right. So when people come to you with things that shouldn't be brought to you, they're affecting that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So
there's that, like, for me though, it's all of that is really the way I see it is it should be half of my week. And the other half should be building new products, designing the next product, working on Ops Calendar, designing that and thinking about like, where does this evolve to?
Right. Being a manager, being an owner.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that helped me bring all of it to the team in like an appropriate way. And at the same time, be able to say to them, you guys are in the same boat. You will be judged based on your performance in your role. So I used Ben as the example. I said, Ben right now, his interference portion of the equation is ridiculous. So Ben will be judged on the performance of the product, the onboarding, the way the admin explains things, how easily people use the product without needing support, all these different things. And right now, he's barely working on that stuff because the interference side is way too high. So what Ben needs to do is have agency over his responsibility and say, how do I improve my equation? I used it as a way to speak to the new guys, Aaron and Matt, who just joined the team. I don't want them to feel like, well, all the crap rolling downhill, you guys are just going to deal with it, so it improves our performance equation. The truth is, I paid my dues, baby. I did 2 years of support, sales, marketing, everything, and now I've moved up, and my performance equation is different. And they should be looking the same thing. They should say, how do I get so good at support that when we hire someone, I become the support manager and my performance isn't based on how many tickets I respond to, but it's how efficiently our support team operates.
Yeah. And this is something that I definitely still struggle with, is like kind of empathizing with the team and their role, like what it's like to be you and have this job that I'm employing you to do, or I'm hiring you to do. I think sometimes I fall into the trap of like, would I want to be doing that? No,
Right, that's an alarm bell.
But like, you have to realize they're in a different position. They're coming from a totally different perspective. They're a different point in their life. They do something else for a living, and we're completely different as well. And so like, people have different priorities, and especially a brand new person joining a team like yours or a team like mine at sort of like an entry level position, like, there's all sorts of benefits that I think we might be blind to, like you get to see what it's like to work at a startup or at a remote team like this. If that's something new to you or you've been a freelancer and now you have a steady, reliable thing to balance out your ups and downs, like those are things that are really important to the team. And I mean, for us, what's most important is growing the business, right? And building these systems and building the machine. But for them, like, they're not as concerned about that. They're more concerned about working on work that matters, having flexibility in their schedule. Like, every person is different. Every role is different, but
being happy.
Yeah.
Right. Like we have a lot of fun, and I think that's a huge part of why people are happy working at CardHook, because it's fun, man. If somebody recruited you and was like, come work at this other company, you would definitely hesitate to be like, it might just not be as happy and fun of an experience. And that it's a huge portion of your life.
No joke. Anyway, I remember when I was employed full time at a web agency back in 2000, I was there from like 2005 to 2008, early 2008, entry level position, really low salary in New York City, which made the salary even lower than what it really was. And the only thing that made me hesitate about leaving and going freelance was that, like, this is awesome. I love the people. We have fun. We go out to concerts. We go out to dinner and happy hour. And it's a blast to work here. Like, I can't ask for a better, more enjoyable job, but kind of have an itch to go freelance. Yeah, you know,
it's a big deal. Yeah. So what I want to get to in life, and we only have a few more minutes left. So I feel good about that equation and the context that helped provide to myself and to the whole team about like this next phase. We have 6 people. We're about to have 8. Everyone kind of has their battle stations, and everyone needs to be protective of their performance because that's how they're going to be judged. And so try not to interfere with other people, trying to make sure that your interference quotient isn't too high. So that part I feel good about. Here's the part I still don't have a good grasp on. It. You just touched on it before. Being okay with only wanting to do, let's call it CEO things, is a weird, mysterious, you feel guilty almost.
Like you know, because you feel like you should be working on other things, like in the operation, or
you almost feel guilty that you're not going to be working on things in operations, and that you're just going to take meetings and do a few calls here and there, and it's a strange transition.
I kind of struggle with that too sometimes. Except, you guys are mostly remote as well, so it's not like everybody sees what everybody's working on every hour of the day. So I sometimes struggle with, this is just personally, I don't know that anybody else on the team cares, but do they know what I'm doing? Do they know what I'm working on? And like,
is it important for them to know? Like, is it okay?
Oh, there's a ton of stuff
if you did nothing?
Right. Like they certainly like see.
Is that the goal? Should the goal for you to do nothing?
I mean, there are days when I am out with the family and during the work day, and like, but they have that sort of freedom too. Part of the thing that I think about is that like all the effort that I put into crafting our sales process and our demo video, and like that's a lot of stuff. And it's
high leverage stuff.
And it's almost perfect now. I spent 2 years refining that. But that's basically, all that work is basically invisible to everybody else on the team because they're not involved in that part of it, you know?
It's a strange thing. Because my goal in my head, it's turning into how to do as little work as possible. So now the funny thing is, I had a call with the business coach, and I said that to him. And he goes, "So let me get this straight. You think you're going to like hire for marketing and hire for support, hire for this, and that's going to leave you to do nothing?" It's like, if you go hire like 6 more people, you're going to be real busy. Don't worry. So it's just a shifting thing. Anyway, all right. I'm getting funny looks at the conference room I'm at.
Cool. Yeah,
I think it's a good place to stop.
I got
to
hop on on hiring a job interview here. So,
all right, cool. So we're both working on the right things, my man.
All right, dude.
Great to speak with you, everybody. Thanks for listening, Brian. Have a great weekend, my man. Happy 4th of July. God bless.
That's right. America. Later, guys.